X5. The Problem of Handling Evil. Number 1A.
This afternoon we want to take the question of handling evil. We have seen this morning that on the level of Christian Science and absolute Christian Science, we have to handle the belief in evil. And unless we don't handle the belief in evil, our consciousness is not pure and free from error, and therefore would not be able really to grasp the purity and oneness of being in divine science and in science itself. So it is necessary to take up that question of evil and how to handle evil. Therefore, I have asked you as a preparatory step to take those notes on handling evil and study them in a way that is appropriate for each individual. Usually, the students at home have to write out all those references in a notebook. And if they don't write out all of them, at least I ask them to write out the most pertinent ones, so that they can go over them from time to time, because there is in the human mind an argument that always will come up and always say again, don't handle evil. And this is true especially when in our basic research we are investigating the higher levels of consciousness, as we do in the level book, that the thought always comes up that says, well, if we see that chart and we start out right from the top of science itself, then we do not need to handle evil because there is no evil. And you could see the falsity in this reasoning, because we can only start from the top when we have gone up to the top. And there again one hears, well, you don't have to go up to the top, you are always on the top because man was always the perfect idea of God. Well, this all sounds wonderful, but it's really a teaching for kindergarten stage and not for scientific thinkers. Because we really have to see through the argument of evil and not just state that evil is nothing. Also, I heard the same argument when my book on animal magnetism was published, that they felt, why to go back to what? To the wonderful chapter in Science and Health called Animal Magnetism. So apparently that is going back to. I think it's going forward to. If we investigate any chapter in the textbook, we jolly well are going forward and not back to something outgrown. We have not outgrown the chapter Animal Magnetism, but we are in the midst of seeing through the claim of animal magnetism, and the better we see through it, the more we can see the purity of the oneness of being. Also, perhaps I would like to remind you in regard to the necessity of handling evil, how John Dolly, who has been really a terrific pioneer in this idea, and actually after Mrs. Eddy being the only one that really showed in that textbook another system of reference than the ordinary reader could see in it, that when he was asked, why do you think that out of the millions of Christian scientists, out of those millions devoted Christian scientists, you were the one who could see the system of Christian Science, the signs of Christian Science, he would always answer that he feels that he was chosen for that because right from the beginning he was acquainted with Christian Science. He would handle animal magnetism in general every day. He reduced, so to say, his vision down to the fact that he was handling animal magnetism, handling evil systematically, not just through the practice in healing, where naturally every practitioner has to handle their belief in sickness and error, but that he did it in that general way which touches naturally the claims that are opposed to absolute Christian Science, those latent errors. And only by handling them consistently and systematically, he could somehow culture consciousness that became free of darkness and therefore transparent for the new light, and therefore could also see the advancing stage that came to him. So we see that there is a necessity of handling evil, but I can understand that many to whom we say, well, in Christian Science you have to handle evil, this is a method, that they say, but how can you handle evil if it is nothing? And in a way, you see, they are right, because we do not always state things to the nth degree systematically and analyzed. What we naturally mean by handling evil is not what the other means, that we believe that evil is a something. When we say we must handle evil, we naturally mean we must handle the belief in evil. This is meant in the general term of handling evil, because this is quite clear that every Christian Scientist knows that evil is not a something, an identity per se. Every Christian Scientist knows that evil is neither person, place, nor thing, that evil is not a substantial reality. Everybody knows that. So when we say we have to handle evil, we do not mean that there is somewhere outside of our consciousness something that has the reality and identity of evil, that evil may be an entity. We always mean that it is within us that we handle the claim of evil, the belief in evil. So if we say handling evil, we mean handling the belief in evil. But then also I feel that as Christian Scientists we have, so to say, accepted as an axiom that Mrs. Eddy's revelation, as she puts it forward in the textbook, is the authority for us, and that that textbook presents the whole system, the whole teaching, and that therefore we also have to take the whole teaching as our basis and not just some aspect of the teaching. This is what you see with most of the dissenters, most of those who go not along the line of science, that they always stress one aspect of the textbook and leave out all the other aspects. They either stress the aspect of the absolute and leave out the level of Christian Science, therefore they are absolutists. It is right to go out from the absolute, but it's a negative standpoint if that standpoint is the only standpoint that we take into consideration, because the textbook as it is takes in all the standpoints. So I feel what we are doing today is to go through Mrs. Eddy's work and see that we take her exposition of evil and of handling evil as authority, and therefore take the whole of her discovery and not just some statements of it, but that we also must see the logic of these statements. That we cannot just do what others do when they say, well, evil is neither person, place, nor thing, it is just an illusion, finished. That's one statement out of hundreds other statements that demand much more than just this aspect And so we must see that we take in all the aspects, and then sometimes it seems that these aspects are contradictory. And therefore, when they seem to be contradictory, we have to weigh these statements and see what is the solution for this contradiction. So often people, and more and more in the last few years, people come and say Christian Science is paradoxical, because they cannot see the interrelationship of all aspects, that they make a whole. And this I want to show this week, that by taking into consideration all statements, we will find some deeper, higher meaning, which will be the outcome of this study. And I would say it is the logic of Christian Science, and logic is that which solves every paradox. So, right from the beginning, really, even from the Bible, the biblical writers could see that evil is not an entity per se, because the first time really the question of evil arises in the second record of creation, we already see there that he doesn't speak of good and evil, but that Mrs. Eric calls that tree of good and evil the tree and the Bible in the knowledge of good and evil. Again, we see what we have to see through is our belief, our false knowing, and that evil is never anything per se, no entity per se. We also see in the course of years and years talking to various Christian Scientists this, that they make either too much of evil, and then they make a bigger reality of evil, or they make too little of evil, and then evil can use them as a channel. Evil let alone grows on consciousness. So it isn't a question really of making too much, not too little, but I would say the question is to see through evil. That's the great point. And seeing through evil, and not weighing, is there evil, is there not evil? This is a wrong question that can never be answered, because it's a wrong question, because there isn't an evil, so we cannot ask, is evil real, is evil unreal, because this does not exist. But our approach to it, our standpoint to it, our consciousness towards it, is really that which has to be corrected. Therefore, it is our reasoning, our knowledge of good and evil, our reasoning about fact and counterfeit that needs to be set straight. And that will be, so to say, the fundamental starting point for the absolute unique logic in Christian Science, which has no equal in any other science. So it isn't just that simplistic sense of doing away with the belief of evil and say it doesn't exist. It is a question of seeing right through that belief, analyzing that belief, and see how we can correct it. So I don't want to make more of evil by talking now for a few hours and on that question. I want to make less of it. The more I talk about it, I want to make less of it. But I would like to present it in a way that one really gets a good grasp of the nothingness of evil. So I go more or less to some of these statements. You have read them. You have not come here so that I read them to you again. You have studied them. So what I can do is just to give a general glance on the subject and perhaps pinpoint and accentuate those aspects which are essential for understanding the whole question of evil. The very first thing, first point, I tell you now from now on that you can make good notes. I say point one and then point two and then I'll come to point three so that you can make good notes or better notes. So I start with point one, which you can give the title, The Necessity of Handling Evil. The Necessity of Handling Evil. I always wait a little bit until I feel you have written it down. Some write quicker, some a bit slower. Here we have a great statement in miscellaneous writings by Mrs. Eddy, which I think depicts the atmosphere which we encounter today very well. That attitude that is there with many people that say, oh, the teaching of Christian Science, that truth, that revelation is so wonderful, so big, so enlightening. Let's not think about error. Let's not turn our thoughts towards error. Just keep that out that is not within the realm of this wonderful revelation. So don't think about it. Let it out. Did Mrs. Eddy feel that way? Yes. For quite a while she felt that way, that she had this terrific influx of light of which she speaks when she saw the new system of reference and could see the reality of the spiritual, and she was so overflooded by that light that she too felt, let no evil come near to me. And she depicts that attitude in that statement where she said, I shall not forget the cost of investigating for this age the modes and power of error. It cost her something. It wasn't easy, apparently. While the ways... Now, here you have that whole atmosphere of the spiritual. While the ways, means, and potency of truth had flowed into my consciousness as easily as dawns the morning light and shadows flee, the metaphysical mystery of error. You see, it's a mystery of error. Its hidden paths, purpose, and fruits at first defied me. You see what she said? Though she was so overflooded with that light and with that truth, error defied her. Step by step she could see that she was cornered by animal magnetism. And she couldn't really find out what was working, how she could reconcile this wonderful truth on one side and all those unhappy, inharmonious experiences she went through. At first, defied me. Do we want to be defied? Do we want to study the signs of Christian Science and be step by step defied? Well, if we don't go the way and see through every level how to practice that science, we will be defied, individually and collectively. I was saying all the time, this is typical, come not thou into the secret. But, here we have again that but, at length took up the research of evil, the research of the ways and means and secret modes of evil, took up that research according, and here is an interesting thing, to God's command. It wasn't just her interest in it. She didn't just want to put her nose into mortal mind, but she felt it was God's command that she should know both the truth and the somethingness of truth. And she should also know why error is nothing. So this cost her a lot, as we know. So if it is true for her, it is true for us, because we have to gain the same understanding as she had. So the title of this first point was The Necessity of Ending Evil, to bring home that we actually now should never again fall into that silly argument and silly saying We don't need to handle evil. All what we need is truth. And we should once and for all clear up that question. I feel it must be cleared up once and for all so as to get peace. Because I see over the years that people always fall back and say, oh, well, we don't need to handle evil. We don't need to see evil. Evil is anyway nothing. Therefore, you see that in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy, especially in the chapter on teaching, that's interesting, that you would tell over and over that the teacher is obliged to open the eyes of his student to error of every sort. She didn't believe in closing the eyes so that one doesn't see error. She believed in opening the eyes and see error without making a reality of it. That's naturally the main point. And so she asks also in the chapter on teaching that the teacher points out to his students error as well as truth, both. So if we really believe in Mrs. Eddy's discovery, then we must take her whole teaching and not only some aspects of it. Well, that was the teaching that even God gave to Moses. Because before Moses could really go down to Egypt and handle that whole situation down in Egypt and bring the people of Israel out of Egypt, God had first to show him how to handle evil. You know, in that account where Moses had a rod in his hand and God asked him to put away the rod, that wisdom bade him to put away the rod, and it became a serpent. If we just discard the question of evil, it is a serpent. It becomes something. If we just say there is no evil, then evil is really something, because we haven't seen through it. And then God commanded Moses to take up the serpent again at the tail, and it became a rod. The moment he take it up with his hand, the moment he handled it, at the end of it, up to the end of it, up to the tail of it, it became a road on which he could lean. From that moment on, he could go down to Egypt, and he could lean on his understanding. And through those seven plagues, he had to disprove the beliefs of error. He had to disprove the belief in a counterfeit mind. He had to disprove the belief in matter. He had to disprove the belief in sin. He had to disprove the belief in personal theories. He had to disprove the belief in death. He had to disprove the belief in sickness. He had to give the disproof of that there is no salvation. And so he could save the children of Israel. The same thing is true for us. If we really can see through the claim of evil from the point of view of the seventh synonymous term, then evil will be no more a serpent that can bite us into the heel. But then evil becomes a staff in our hand, a rod on which we can lean and which makes us strong. All right, that's the necessity of handling evil. I come to a second point, point two. The nothingness of nothing must be understood. The nothingness of nothing must be understood. The accent is on understood. Why do I put that accent on understood? Well, here it is. Mrs. Eddy's teaching says that the nothingness of nothing is plain. It doesn't need much intelligence to see that nothing is nothing. Now, to see that is, I stated it wrongly, sorry. It is very difficult to see that, but it's very easy to state that the nothingness of nothing is nothing. Very easy, because it's just a matter of definition. Because the term nothingness means that this is no thing, no nothing. So it's plain. It's just a question of definition. But she says, she goes on, she comes again with a but. Always the but are important. But we need to understand that error is in italics, is nothing, and that its nothingness must be demonstrated in order to prove the somethingness, yea, the allness of truth. Well, I said the accent is on understand. Why? Because one makes that mistake usually in Christian Science, that one puts statement and understanding as synonymous terms. We feel, or many students feel, that if they state that nothing is nothing, that such a statement is understanding. A statement is just a statement. It has no power in itself. We can state all these beautiful things, either in the realm of truth or in the realm of error. We can state them. They are correct statements. But until they are understood, they are powerless. They are just nothing. It's just a clarification of terminology. That's all. So from this point on, let's see that we can make lot of true statements. But a true statement is not truth. It's only a true statement within the realm of thinking. But understand is something very different, because understanding is a quality of God, quality of spirit. And to understand the statement is something very different than to make a statement. That's why we have so wonderful discussions and full of wonderful statements, and we feel so happy about them, but they never do a trick. They have no vigor. They have no power in it. They don't do things. Only when we understand them, therefore when we see them in all their ramifications and implications, then we understand them, only then have they power. Then they have a Christ power within them. She says, the sick are not healed merely by declaring there is no sickness. Can you hear declaring? But by knowing that there is none. So she makes that terrific comparison between declarations and statements and saying, and on one side, and on the other side, the knowing of it, the understanding of it, the awareness of it, the consciousness of it. Yes.